This is Paula Kaufman, returning with the Herald and Review, dated October 6, 2016. We'll continue with the death notices. Leon Edward Baker, Sr. Leon Edward Baker, Sr., 96, of Mount Zion, passed away on Tuesday, October 4, 2016, in his home. A funeral to celebrate Leon's life will be 10 a.m. Monday, October 10, 2016, in Morin and Gerbel Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 2 to 4 p.m. Sunday in the funeral home. Burial will be in Macon County Memorial Park with military honors conducted by the Macon County Honor Guard. Georgia A. Eubanks passed away on October 1, 2016 at home at the age of 72. Services celebrating her life will be held 12 noon Saturday, October 8, 2016 at Main Street Church of the Living God with visitation 1 hour before service. Burial in Macon County Memorial Park. Charlotte Carolyn Capper, K-A-P-P-E-R, 88, of Decatur, passed away Tuesday, October 4, 2016, at Lincolnshire Memory Care, with her family by her side. Mass of Christian burial to celebrate her life will be 10 a.m. Saturday, October 8, 2016, at Holy Family Catholic Church, Very Reverend Joseph M. Molloy, V.F., celebrant. Burial will be in Mount Gilead Cemetery following the Mass. The family requests casual attire for her visitation and Mass. Mary Joyce Lieb, 86, of Shelbyville, Illinois, died at 12:25 p.m. Saturday, October 1, 2016, in Shelbyville Rehabilitation and Health Care Center. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 8, 2016, in Immaculate Conception Catholic Church, Shelbyville, with Father Mariana Seth Lurie as celebrant, assisted by Deacon John O'Brien. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday in the church. Burial will be in Glenwood Cemetery, Shelbyville, Illinois. David C. Sparrow, 79, of Kenny, Illinois, passed away 8:12 a.m. October 4, 2016, at his family residence in Kenny, Illinois. Graveside services will be at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, October 7, 2016, at the Baptist Cemetery in Kenny, Illinois, with Pastor Randy Munson officiating. The family has requested casual attire. Sherry Lynn West, 51, of Iliopolis, Illinois, passed away at 7:56 a.m. Monday, October 3, 2016, at Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis, Missouri. Services for Sherry will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday, October 7, 2016, at the First United Methodist Church in Springfield, with Roger Ross officiating. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, October 6, 2016, at Frick Calvert Schroeder Funeral Home in Mount Pulaski. Burial will follow the services at Riverside Cemetery, Iliopolis. Gill Ends Independent Candidacy for Congress by Dan Petrella, H&R Springfield Bureau Chief. Springfield. Bloomington physician David Gill is ending his independent bid for Congress in Illinois' 13th District after a second U.S. Supreme Court justice declined to take up his ballot access case. Gill, who's previously run for Congress 4 times as a Democrat, filed a federal lawsuit challenging the state's signature requirement for independent congressional candidates, after he collected fewer than 8,500 of the 10,754 valid petition signatures he needed to earn a spot on the November 8th ballot. A federal judge in August ordered the Illinois State Board of Elections to allow Gill on the ballot, but the U.S. Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals subsequently blocked that order. Gill asked the U.S. Supreme Court to step in, and after Justice Elena Kagan denied his request last week, he appealed again to Justice Anthony Kennedy. Kennedy on Tuesday denied the request. In the past 6 weeks, we've witnessed a complete denial of due process and justice, and the anti-democracy folks have won through gamesmanship and procedural tactics, Gill said Wednesday. I've said for many years that our politics and government have rotted from the inside by having two major parties, which are both owned by Wall Street. It's clear now that the rot extends into our judicial system. Under state law, Gill still has time to notify local election authorities if he wishes to run as a write-in candidate, but he won't be doing so, campaign manager Don Necessary said. While Gill's candidacy is over, his lawsuit over Illinois' signature requirement for independent congressional candidates continues. Gill's lawsuit argues that the requirement is unconstitutional because it's out of line with the requirements for major party candidates. His would-be opponents, U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, Republican from Taylorville, and Democratic challenger Mark Wicklund of Decatur, each had to gather fewer than 740 signatures on their nominating petitions. Although she didn't make a final ruling on the merits of the argument, U.S. District Judge Sue Myerscough found that Gill had shown a modicum of support through the large number of signatures he gathered, and that he and his supporters would be irreparably harmed by his exclusion from the ballot. Representing the Elections Board, the Illinois Attorney General's office has argued that the signature requirement is valid because the state has an interest in preventing overcrowding of the ballot and potential voter confusion. Following the appellate court order last month that led to his removal from the ballot, Gill said he planned to carry on the lawsuit regardless of whether he ultimately was allowed to run this year. At the end of the day, that's even more important than the ballot access I'm fighting for this year, he said in mid-September. Gill has argued that the high signature requirement for independence is designed to protect a two-party system that doesn't benefit voters. Gill said he was encouraged by the support he received this year and may seek to build on it for a sixth congressional bid in 2018. Wind Farm Supporters Objectors Face Off by Derek B. Lee News Service Writer, Bloomington. Supporters and opponents of a new McLean County wind farm policy faced off at a hearing in front of the county's Board of Zoning Appeals. The board heard testimony from 15 supporters and 7 objectors to the policy, which officials said cements provisions, including decommissioning, height and noise requirements, that spelled out individually in previous wind farm permits. More testimony will be heard at the ZBA's November 1st meeting. Officials hope to pass the policy before two companies, EDP Renewables and Invenergy, file county paperwork for additional wind farm construction in northeast McLean County. Art of Fear starts the season by Donette Beckett, H&R staff writer, Mount Zion. As a kickoff to the Halloween season, Heroic Age Art Center has brought back the Art of Fear for the third year. The event is 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, October 8th at the Art Center, 135 North Henderson Street, Mount Zion. Admission is free. Families are encouraged to attend dressed in their favorite costumes. Frightening themes will be seen throughout the gallery. Stores and galleries located inside the Art Center will be offering activities, including paintings and other art projects. Other activities include raffles, demonstrations, and trick-or-treating at each stop. Artwork will also be available for purchase. Approximately 15 vendors and artists will display their work outside the center. Items include zombie clothes, food by university dogs, jewelry, crafts, and other themed vendors. Fans can also experience a virtual reality horror game by Immersion Arcade. One of the big attractions to the event has been the celebrity guests seen throughout the day. A fan favorite on the sci-fi television show Face Off is makeup artist Roy Woolley. He will demonstrate horror makeup techniques and discuss his career in television and movies. During Woolley's scheduled appearance, one guest will win the opportunity to be made into one of his creations. He will turn someone into a Hollywood-quality makeup model, said Eric Hector, Heroic Age Art Center creative director. Other celebrities include paranormal author Stephen LaChance, Mark Lee Crawford, creator of the popular zombie character Big Country Zombie, and actress Melissa Cowan. Cowan has appeared as the Bicycle Girl in AMC's The Walking Dead, as well as the CW television show The Vampire Diaries, and the horror film Halloween 2. According to Hector, the celebrities are a popular attraction to the event each year. But this year, we have an even bigger roster than we did before, he said. The celebrities begin the day in different rooms meeting fans. They are also scheduled to give presentations about their work in the lower level of Heroic Age Studios. The event has grown since it began in 2014. The first year, 200 visitors attended, and it grew to 600 last year. This year, organizers are hoping to welcome between 600 and 1,000 people. We have even bigger celebrities and a lot more things happening, Hector said. Each year, we build it up a bit. Hector will also have a special announcement regarding the Frightful 5000 film. The project began over a year ago, encouraging fans of horror movies to join in creating a feature film. After 5,000 fans sign up, the producers will be ready for the next phase in the project. We are starting to do our first full feature produced in the studio, he said. We are almost there. Downtown Exhibit draws art from across the country. By Donette Beckett, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Again this year, artists from all over the country have submitted pieces to the Gallery 510 Arts Guild's annual exhibit, October National. The exhibit will be displayed throughout October in the Madden Arts Center's Ann Lloyd Gallery. A reception will be from 5 to 7:30 p.m. Friday, October 7th, in the gallery. An artist talk will be at 6 p.m. The juried show includes 50 pieces of various mediums, including photography, sculptures, paintings, and textiles. Artists from New York to California have submitted pieces. Of course, our local Illinois artists are well represented as well, said Jamie Rutherford, executive director of Gallery 510. Each year, the gallery advertises the competition in national magazines. Artists send an email or a disc with photos of the art they wish to submit. Accepted pieces are then shipped or hand-delivered. According to Barbara Dove, secretary of the Gallery 510 Arts Guild, artists are always searching for exhibitions such as this to submit their work. As part of the October National, 7 pieces of artwork are devoted to Breast Cancer Awareness Month. These pieces will be acknowledged with their informational labels trimmed in pink. Along with the juried pieces, Gallery 510 will give their own special recognition to breast cancer awareness. The gallery has collaborated with the cancer awareness organization Come Together, Let's Walk for the exhibit. The gallery will display a mosaic made of colored glass, created especially for the 5K event held in June. The piece is designed with the three-ribbon logo used by the organization, recognizing ovarian, breast, and cervical cancer. Survivors and supporters added their touch to this beautiful piece that will be donated back to the organization, Rutherford said. Kane, home of the world's largest charity food drive, by Tim Kane, H&R Entertainment editor. The 15th annual WSOY Community Drive is Friday, October 7th. This is one of the remarkable events in the country, let alone this city. It's amazing how inadvertently dismissive of the effort we can be. Of course that goal was made. The goal always gets made. But everyone needs to stand up and take a bow for the accomplishment. It's not an easy task. It takes hundreds of people to pull it off, both before and during the event. Take a look Friday and see all the volunteers from all walks of life doing all manners of jobs. See all of the effort that has gone in and all the thanks those volunteers are given in ways large and small. The goal for this year's food drive is £1.3 million or dollars of food. Last year's total was $1.27 million, and in 2014, the event surpassed the £1 million mark for the first time. After that, I wrote this. We're repeating it today, with a few adjustments to remove 2014-specific statements, as a reminder that this is a remarkable achievement annually. Decatur, Illinois, home of the world's largest charity food drive. Why not? £1 million. Has that sunk in yet? Because I was typing it all weekend in correspondence with friends and acquaintances in and outside of Decatur, and every time I did so, I thought, did that really happen? It did. Via the WSOY Community Food Drive, Decatur contributed in excess of £1 million of food to local food banks. That night, I made a post on social media encouraging people to go ahead and say something snotty about where I live. People like to do that, you know. People who live here, especially. Generally, too many Decatur residents' obsessions are self-loathing and envy. Anywhere is better than here. And sure, there are times when it is better to be somewhere else. But there is a thing Decatur can claim ahead of all others. It has a larger heart than anyone can imagine. For a day, this community puts its best foot forward and delivers in remarkable style. Every time you might think the drive's results can't improve, or it seems the corporate, government, and economic powers that be deliver the city some injustice, or we feel the need is greater and those with the capability to give number fewer, somehow enough people are able to step up generously. One of the things to come up throughout the broadcast was the feeling that it was a holiday. Not that there was a celebration of others' misfortune and need, but in that we were able to see things of which our friends and neighbors are capable, and what one person can do, what one person's contribution can mean, if all people pull in the same direction. The specific holiday mentioned throughout the day was Christmas. Does that make Kevin Breheny or Brian Byers Santa Claus? And how do you think the volunteers would feel about being referred to as elves from this point forward? And where, into that whole picture, fit the media partners like the Herald and Review, those who get the word out to an even wider audience? One of my favorite moments in 2014 was being able to witness the look on Breheny's face when an on-air guest casually mentioned, "You should get $1 million this year, eh?" Breheny's face was pulled down dramatically, as though the entire weight of the efforts of getting the totals to where they were to that point, less than £500,000, was hanging from his cheeks. The food drive has grown annually. to the point where its beginnings, while impressive, pale in comparison to what it became 10 and 5 years ago, let alone in 2014. The effort put forth by Byers and Breheny, done without them being defined only by that effort, is superhuman. Not only are they able to touch the right people for the right resources for success, they are able to inspire and lead the people who can do every human thing that is needed for success. Those around the first food drive wouldn't recognize it now, and even those who have missed the last 4 or 5 would do double takes now. Not only has the amount of the gifts grown, the experience, broadcast and live, has been streamlined for enjoyment. As each new issue has cropped up, superb solutions have arisen. The best part is how the solutions have been noticeably well-conceived and well-executed, rather than slapdash, and something that is tolerated just because that's the way it is. At one point during the 2014 broadcast, one guest said, "This is the biggest food drive in America, isn't it?" Breheny, notoriously shy about taking bows any time, but especially during the on-air part of the drive, quickly said, "I don't know about that," and changed the subject. But why not? At least the claim can be made. If someone challenges the claim, let them beat it. The benefits could be incredible. And the WSOY drive can still make its claims as the nation's best, at the very least by using pounds per capita, or people served, or length of time pantry shelves are stocked. Decatur, Illinois, home of the world's largest charity food drive. That's got a ring to it, doesn't it? Sports. Illini Boilers Seeking Solid Ground, by Mark Tupper, H&R Executive Sports Editor. Champaign. Every now and then appears an image that perfectly captures the sad state of an athletic program. Remember the freeze-frame TV image of former Illinois coach Tim Beckman foolishly taking a pinch of smokeless tobacco on the sideline? Clueless and without explanation. Remember any of those dazed and confused looks on the face of Kansas coach Charlie Wise? He seemed to be thinking, "What the heck happened to my career?" Well, add this one to the list. Purdue's football program appears to be sinking deeper and deeper into the abyss following last week's 50-7 loss to Maryland. Ticket sales continue to plummet, and the phone rarely rings on Coach Darrell Hazell's weekly call-in radio show. Apathy is always worse than anger. Hazell's record over 3-plus seasons, 8-32, including 2-23 in the Big Ten. With new athletics director Mike Babinski recently hired, Hazell looks like a sure bet to receive a $4.6 million buyout after this season. So it was almost perfect imagery this week when pictures appeared showing how the corner of the end zone at Purdue's Ross Ade Stadium had collapsed in a water-filled sinkhole. Turns out, a pipe broke, causing the ground to flood and cave in. The crater was large enough for a man to stand in. Good thing the Boilermakers are not at home this weekend. Purdue will be at Illinois on Saturday, before returning to West Lafayette, Indiana, for a home game October 15th against Iowa. And Purdue's excellent turf crew will have time to make the necessary repairs. But even Hazell admitted this week that talk of his ouster is surely reaching his football team. Football Notes, DeHoherty, A Game Time Decision, by Aaron Dow, H&R staff writer. The sight was a frightening one for Eisenhower last week. Panthers quarterback Caleb DeHoherty on crutches along the sidelines at Glenwood, unable to put pressure on his left foot. Turns out, Eisenhower avoided the worst-case scenario. X-rays came back negative as DeHoherty suffered an ankle sprain. He's able to put pressure on his foot again, but Eisenhower coach Drew Wagers said he's holding him out of any intensive workouts. "He's doing okay. Every day is getting better," Wagers said. "The swelling is gone, and he's doing some exercises with the trainer. Right now, he's a game day decision. He took care of it at home all weekend." The Panthers are back to take on Springfield this Friday, looking for their 6th win before playing Rochester and Sacred Heart Griffin. Doherty is 59 of 94 passing for 990 yards with 14 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. Clearing hurdles. There's still plenty of season left to go, but Maroya Forsyth may be playing for a share of the Sangamo on its home field in Week 9. The Trojans took the first step toward a conference title with a 21-19 win over previously undefeated Athens last week. Now, the only undefeated team left is Verdun North Mac, who travels to Maroya in Week 9. There's a likely win coming this week against winless Riverton, but Week 8 will present a tough test. Maroya travels to Auburn, who has lost to the other top three Sangamo teams in Athens, Williamsville, and North Mac, but by a combined 9 points. Feeding the horse. No one this season is working as much as Effingham junior Terrence Hill. Hill's now surpassed 200 carries, 203 total, thanks to a monster game against Taylorville, where he rushed 40 times, the most in a game this season. Defenses know he's getting the ball, and he's still picking up 6.3 yards per carry. And of the 23 touchdowns Effingham has this year, Hill's responsible for 15 of them. Clean sheet. Ryan Fike's accuracy has taken a step up this season. The St. Teresa quarterback is hitting his receivers at a better clip, 61 of 98 passing for 62.2%. But it's the 0 interceptions that stand out. He's the only area quarterback with at least 30 attempts to not be picked off, and he has 16 touchdowns. I think the two things we've really stressed, we can't turn the football over, Ramsey said. The second thing is no pre-snap penalties. That turnover differential will be tested against one of the best takeaway defenses in Tuscola. The Warriors have 15 interceptions this season, led by a trio of defenders. Dalton Howell has 4 interceptions, 3 returned for touchdowns, and Kale Cementi and Jared Heath each have 3 interceptions. Undefeated deja vu. It's hard to imagine the scenario where this week's matchup between Newton and Marshall doesn't decide the Little Illini champion. It's the same as last year, as both teams take an undefeated 6-0 record into Friday night. The Lions' defense has been solid, allowing a little more than 10 points per game. Of the 62 allowed points, though, 34 of those have come in the fourth quarter. That likely won't change Newton's plans on offense. The Eagles ran Mitch Bierman 45 times for a school record 354 yards, and that came against a Marshall defense, which allowed just 7 points up until that point. This has been Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated October 6, 2016. I look forward to reading with you again soon.